welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian, your guide to the galaxy of gadgets, gizmos and other things beginning with G. My name's Bobby Johnson and you're listening to the second in our week-long series of podcasts straight from two of the world's biggest technology events, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas and Macworld in San Francisco. Today we're actually at Macworld, coming you live from the Moscone Conference Center, where just a few hours ago Apple's fans turned up to hear the company's final keynote address. For today's show, I'm joined by the Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect of the technology world. You can decide which one's which. First, we've got Chris Finn, who's the deputy editor of Macformat magazine. And we've also got regular Guardian contributor Danny Bradbury. Hello, how are you both?
Very well, thank you.
Pleased to meet you.
Excellent. Over the next 15 minutes, we'll be discussing what was said, who said it, and what it all means. So have a drink, grab a towel, and prepare yourself. Just whatever you do, don't panic. We're just a few steps away now from the spot where Steve Jobs didn't give Apple's keynote. That job was left to Phil Schiller, who took over from his boss to deliver the last Apple Macworld keynote. What did he unveil? Well, perhaps I'll let him do the talking.
Well, if you want to hear some new things today, and I assume some people want to hear a few new things today, well, I've got three new things to tell you about. Number one, an entire new version of iLife, iLife 09. This year with iPhoto 09, we're adding another way for you to manage your photos called Faces. How does it work? Well, Faces uses a technology called face detection. So number two, we also have a completely new version of iWork. There's one other thing we're doing with iWork that I'm really excited to tell you about, and it's a service we've been working on, a service called iWork.com. You can easily upload your documents into iWork.com, and those people that you've shared it with can view the documents online. One more thing, the third thing, is the new 17-inch MacBook Pro. Yeah. It's absolutely stunning. It's super thin, 0.98 inches thin. That's the world's thinnest 17-inch notebook.
Apple's Phil Schiller there telling us about the big new stuff from the company, which boils down to, as far as I can tell, a few software updates, a new laptop, and probably the biggest news of the day, the entire iTunes catalog going DRM-free. Now, we're going to get to the ins and outs of that in a minute. But first of all, I just wanted to talk about the speech itself. I don't know who caught it, but how do we think Phil Schiller did as a stand-in for Steve Jobs?
I've never actually seen Jobs directly, but I thought he held his own, Schiller. I mean, he certainly kept my interest along what was generally quite a fairly mundane set of announcements this time.
He's quite a sweet guy. I think he's quite adorable when he does presentations. He's sort of like your dad telling you about something new, and he's quite excitable and it's quite naive and quite adorable when he does it. He doesn't quite get the panache and flair of Jobs, no, but he's quite sweet.
I did think at the end they brought on Tony Bennett to do a little number. I thought he was going to do "We Left Our Boss in Cupertino" rather than "I Left My Heart," which he did do actually. Anyway, enough of that. Let's actually talk about what happened. So first of all, I wanted to talk about the thing that's probably going to matter more to the people listening, which is iTunes, because it's pretty significant to hear that Apple's come to an agreement with the record labels, and we're going to see, you know, the whole catalog without any copy restriction on it. So, is that an exciting thing to discover?
It's bizarre, isn't it? Because Apple has been for so long the innovator in the digital music market, and it's been creating this market for digital downloads. It's now the number one seller. But it has been the slowest, actually, to bring DRM-free tracks to market. You've got Amazon in the US and just recently launched in the UK with their MP3 downloads that are DRM-free, 7digital. You've got a lot of companies that have actually been doing it. It's quite strange to see Apple on the back foot with that.
And I guess to a certain extent, just because they carry so much weight in the business, and you know what, they just sell so much more music than everyone else. I mean, it was always going to be more difficult to sort of get people to go along with them on that, you know, because it just means they're giving away so much more for free from the labels.
It's interesting as well, because we were saying, oh, fantastic, DRM-free, that'll be really, really good. But actually, it's not quite the great news story it might first appear, because you will actually have to pay to upgrade, in inverted commas, your music from protected DRM, Fair Play protected AAC tracks to DRM-free AAC tracks. You could pay, what, 20 pence a track, something like that?
Yeah, I think
so. So there'll be a fair old... I mean, if you've got a big music collection, if you've bought a lot of stuff from iTunes, then yeah, sure, you can strip the DRM off legally, not a problem at all, but it'll cost you a pretty penny.
Yeah, and the other thing I think is, do we believe Apple's position in the past where they've said, you know, the reason we can't do DRM is because the record labels are playing a game against us? You know, they're going to Amazon and giving them everything, but they won't give it to us because they want to break our monopoly or our dominance in the market. I mean, is this the record labels accepting that they can't beat iTunes?
Well, what did they, how many music tracks did they say they'd sold now? Something like
6 billion?
Yeah,
I think
so. I mean, yeah.
it's a big sales
one,
story.
That's one for every person in the world, isn't it? Yeah.
So I mean, I sort of get the feeling that they were just sort of trying to play fight a rearguard action against Apple for as long as they could. But eventually, Apple just carries so much weight. They're in really at the start, and they're just unstoppable now.
It's interesting. That idea of them being unstoppable, that sort of inevitability is really interesting. And I think since we've seen Amazon as obviously the biggest name who's been doing MP3 downloads, providing DRM-free tracks for most of the big labels, and certainly a lot of the indies as well, you can sort of think, it was inevitable that iTunes was always going to get that as well. But you're absolutely right. It's not inevitable that Apple get that. And Apple doesn't have as much clout with the music industry as possibly Apple would like us to believe it has.
Yeah, we're only talking about a story that's been, 5 years in the making. It's not exactly as if they've been building up for decades to this point of dominance. You know, they've come out of nowhere, and there's still a lot to play for, isn't there?
Well, the funny thing is for me is I used to get really annoyed at the lack of DRM, you know, on iTunes, and I didn't buy iTunes music for a long time for that reason. But like, since I got the iPhone, I basically don't really use the PC or the Mac for music at all. I just use the iPhone. I download everything to the iPhone, and I'm so sort of locked in, but I almost don't care at this point. Like, that's my device for listening to music. If I want to listen to it in the house, I can use a dock. And I don't really want to take the music anywhere else. You know?
It is a big discussion. It's a much wider discussion, isn't it? As soon as you start talking about that, you start talking about the whole open source ethos and having absolute portability and not being locked in. But you're right. For a lot of people, it's that convenience thing, isn't it? Where if it's convenient, they're happy to, you know, be compromised slightly. And it's that classic thing with MP3. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the one time in the music industry that the quality has gone back a step rather than forward a step. Yeah. But for the sake of convenience, people are happy to put up with it.
It's true, you know. I mean, like, because I tell you where I get a lot of my music actually is in the bar. And what I'll do is I'll sit there, you know, sort of working away, chatting with friends, and something will come on the speakers in the bar, and they always play really good music in the bar that I go to. And I've got this application on the iPhone. It's called Shazam. Hold it up, it recognises the music. It asks me if I want to buy it. I buy it. You know, job done. And it's so convenient that I'm willing to give away the freedom of taking the music somewhere else. I just don't care.
The good thing now, though, of course, is you won't have to.
Yeah.
Yay! Which, I mean, it is a good thing, but it's possibly not the sort of, massive change that we've actually, that it's possibly been portrayed as. It's not exactly a sort of Damascene moment, I don't think, in the industry.
And the flip side of it, of course, is that, you know, in order to get the DRM-free catalogue, Apple have given up on their kind of single pricing strategy. So now, you know, instead of every track being 79p, we got three tiers, 59, 79, and 99, I think. Which, you know, on the surface sounds okay, but what if every track suddenly starts costing 99p that you want? That's a big change in itself, isn't it?
Well, because what Schiller said was that most of the songs would end up being on the lower tier. And actually, what I find myself doing is, rather than going and burning, you know, an old CD or ripping something from vinyl, I'll sort of hear an old Bowie track and I'll think, oh yeah, I really fancy listening to that again, and I'll buy it. And it's all that stuff that's going to be cheaper. So for someone like me that's just trying to flesh out their old music tracks and, you know, sort of find old punk records that they've never heard before and want to download, it's actually, I think, quite a good deal.
And to be honest, unless you, again, it sort of opens up into a huge big argument about capitalism and supply and demand and all that sort of stuff, which is an interesting debate. But the thing is, if you want to have the latest track from Beyoncé, you're clearly in need of medical attention, but more to the point, you can, you know, you should be willing to pay a little bit more for it. And if you're not, you don't want it all that much, sort of thing. You know, it depends how much you actually want to interact with the music you're buying.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the kind of the weird flip side of economics that we're uncovering now, is that the greater the demand, you know, for an unlimited amount of stuff, because, you know, digital distribution isn't particularly difficult and expensive, you know, actually you're going to pay more for things that are popular rather than pay less for a kind of an abundance of stuff, which is kind of a weird spin on things, isn't it? But let's move on from iTunes. The other the other one I'll talk about now was the hardware announcement, which was the new 17-inch MacBook Pro, just kind of fitted into the range that they've already got, looked a bit obvious and everything, but they did bang on about the battery technology.
They were
a lot.
Spinning it really hard, weren't they? Yeah. They were spinning that frantically.
And you could hear like the audience just like not buying
They're
it.
Not, they weren't.
There wasn't any
buying,
clapping. Everyone's like deadly silence. Tumbleweeds blowing by. You know.
So the reason they're having to spin it was that it's now a sealed. Well, it's an integrated battery. It's not a removable battery from the new 17-inch MacBook Pro. So you can't just flip it out when the charge when the performance has decreased. You can't carry multiple batteries with you if, like us, you're covering trade shows a lot and you need to have a lot of charge with you. You can't charge up multiple batteries and do that sort of stuff. And if you want to have it replaced, you have to send it back to Apple or go back into an Apple store, an Apple authorised resale, and get it replaced that way. I think it's £135, including VAT, to have that battery replaced. So, you know, that's a big thing.
It is, yeah. And I don't know, the other thing is I'm really worried about the chemistry, because they're on the rumour mill, everyone thought they were going to switch to silver-zinc batteries, and they didn't.
Lithium.
They just stayed with, like, lithium polymer, which, you know, is not a new thing. And the problem with sort of the whole lithium thing with batteries is that over time, the capacity of the battery drops. And, I mean, they announced that they're doing special things in terms of having a separate sort of chip for each cell of the battery and so on, but they didn't really talk too much about exactly how much it was going to degrade over time. You know.
In Apple's defense, and I never usually do this, but in Apple's defense, there's a couple of reasons for doing it, and it does mean that rather than having a sort of big chunky thing that's a big rectangle that you slot into a box, they can sort of mold the battery around the sort of spare space in the chassis, so it's actually a bigger capacity battery. So if you're running on the discrete, rather, if you're running on the integrated graphics, you should get 8 hours of battery life out of it. And Apple's quite good these days about not quoting like sort of theoretical maximums for battery life, but actual real world battery life. So, I mean, 8 hours is a good. That's a working day. That's not bad.
But Danny's right. I mean, you know, I know with the machine that's sitting in front of me right now, you know, it starts off with a battery life of whatever 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. 6 months later, it's down to 50% of that capacity, and it just degrades. And when it starts going. Man, it goes fast.
Well, we need to
actually
do some research into this, because Apple's been quite big on this thing, talking about, well, there's 1,000 recharge cycles in the new battery in the MacBook Pro. And that, incidentally, that doesn't mean like you sort of plug it in and that's a charge cycle. A charge cycle is a full charge up, decharge cycle. So that's 1,000 of those you can get over the life of the battery, which they're saying should last you about 5 years. Now, what they said to me when I met with some of the senior vice presidents of the company earlier this morning was that regular laptop batteries tend to give you about 300 charge cycles. So 1,000 is actually a good old number. Mm-hmm. And I guess for a lot of people, a five-year lifespan, if that is typical, if that's a reasonable estimate, a five-year lifespan for a laptop think about replacing the battery,
that's the big
not bad.
Play, isn't it? It's like whether it lasts 3, 4, 5 years, you know, the point is by the end of it, you're not going to get the battery replaced. You're going to buy a new laptop.
Which is sort of what they want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Works for all of them. Well, okay, we'll stop there with the hardware as well. We'll come back to software in a minute. But we've heard from the, quote, experts. Now, what about the punters? I went to ask the audience what they thought of Macworld so far.
My name is Robert Zussman. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm the president of the Arizona Macintosh Users Group. We've been around for 25 years. I don't think I've missed a Mac World since they started. When you've been around as long as I have in the Mac community, you get a little jaded. I guess there was a couple things I was hoping for. New towers, maybe a new Mac Mini, and Blu-ray, and none of those have shown up so far. The 17-inch machine sounds kind of interesting, but it's certainly not earth-shattering.
We've been here 4 or 5 times before, so it's kind of fun every year to come up to the city and see all the new products. It's not as crowded as before, so there's less people, we've noticed, but still all the vendors are here and a lot of good demos, so the technology's still impressive. There was a tablet PC that looked good from Accutron. That was really something.
The ongoing thing is like, you know, Apple won't be here next year and all that kind of stuff. And so you're kind of like hoping that maybe they'll come out with something, one last big bang. Nothing too spectacular. A lot of stuff that I've seen before. A lot of improvements, a lot of updates. But, you know, still solid, still good.
My name is Loretta Omania. Every year they change, so you have to have deep pockets. With Mac, you have to have deep pockets. You know?
So yeah, and your pockets aren't deep enough.
Well,
to...
Well, not anymore. I'm retired. You know that movie about the house? You know, and there's a money pit in there. Every 6 months or something, they change.
Okay, so we've spoken about iTunes, we've spoken about laptops. Now let's do a quick look at the other stuff Apple showed off today, which was the software. We saw some updates to the iLife suite and to iWork, and there was a lot of emphasis on iMovie and GarageBand, but it went on for a long time. Was there actually anything to get excited about?
Yeah, I really think there was. It's, you know, I never really was interested in iLife before. I sort of always just assumed it was for, you know, people that just want to stick annoying stationery on their email and so on, and, you know, store photos in really fairly mundane ways. But the whole thing with iPhoto, where they're going to be integrating it with Google Maps and doing automatic geotagging, and also not just facial detection but facial recognition, so it sort of goes and tries to find pictures of certain people and group them together. I thought that was really impressive.
The facial recognition stuff is very good. The way it works is that you tell the iPhoto that one of the pictures you're looking at has this person in it, you name that person, and then it sort of goes, right, okay, so I've found a bunch of other photographs that I think are the same person that you've just told me is that person, and you can then go, yes, that's him, no, that's not him, yes, 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 and then that refines its detection, and then when you're comfortable with how well it's doing, you just say, yep, go, tag all my photographs, and it'll go through and tag all your photographs in there. Now, again, we can't say how good it is until we've actually played with the product, but it certainly looks as if it could be quite impressive. It remains to be seen how well it deals with the quarters and profiles and people in strange lighting conditions and stuff, but it looks quite cool.
It's actually funny though, because before I came to the show, you know, I was just going through the exhibitors and working out who I wanted to go visit, and there was one company that does facial detection and recognition, and I went down after the keynote and they'd gone home. There was just nothing there. It was just like a sign and an empty plug, you know?
Same with, there's a developer in the UK called Fraser Spears who develops an application, a plugin for iPhoto that allows you to upload your photographs directly from iPhoto to Flickr, which is a great application. But now iPhoto 09 does that as well automatically. And I was watching his Twitter feed as the thing was going, and he's getting progressively less and less impressed with the whole thing.
Yeah. This is another thing. I mean, in GarageBand, they touted this, you know, learn music, learn to play an instrument with GarageBand, and, you know, here's Sting, who can tell you how to play Roxanne, and, yes, you know, all that. And you know, I could think of a number of people who develop you know, music teaching software who are just like, the rope is out and it's hanging around their necks at the moment.
Well,
isn't
I'm just
it?
Thinking, like, you know, independent guitar teachers like the world over are probably like wringing their hands thinking, oh my god.
It did look quite good though. I was quite impressed with it. It looked like it actually be quite an interesting little feature, just doing basic lessons and video tutorials on how to play, you know, guitar and piano and stuff. And you're right, it was quite cool. And then they told me you had to pay for it, but the artist lessons thing, where, as Bobby says, you could get like Sting or Norah Jones telling you how to play one of their songs, and they sort of sit down, typical Apple style, and say, hey, teach you how to play a song. It was quite fun. But those are $4.99 each, something like that.
Yeah.
For those episodes, they're like, oh, yeah. Ooh, tumbleweed and church clocks chiming.
Yeah, I can imagine that goes to a kind of more like a middle-aged enthusiast market almost. Yeah. You know, than you know, come on, is some little kid really going to want Sting?
Who's Sting, Daddy?
No, but it's true for, like, you know, your old farts like me. I'd be actually really interested in knowing, because it's not just telling you how to play the songs.
They tell stories about the songs.
It was hilarious, wasn't it? Like the summer of 79, as I recall. It's a fireside chat.
Yeah, it really was.
But that's it. You get the added experience. The one thing I wanted to talk about was iMovie. Because last year they announced the new iMovie. Woo, isn't this excellent?
Which stripped everything out from the good thing.
And everybody who actually used iMovie for anything interesting said, you've screwed us over. You know, you have taken every useful feature out of iMovie in favour of a user interface upgrade, basically. And now they're charging you to put that stuff back in. So, I mean, are we going to see another revolt over this, or are people just going
to say, flip-flop one way and the other?
actually, it does what I wanted it to do, so I'm just going to buy it anyway.
It's quite funny, because last year, with the release of iMovie 08, and you're right, it did rip out the heart of iMovie, and everybody's like, oh, that's ridiculous, I want to use slow motion, and I want to be able to do the audio stuff, and all that sort of stuff. And this year, they put all that stuff sort of back in, and I've overheard a handful of people saying, yeah, it looks really complicated, I don't know if I can... What do you want?
Yeah. One or the other, please. No, it's funny, because actually when they showed, you know, the ability to separate audio from video, I thought, like, this is new. Like, this is incredible. This is basic, you know. Yeah.
There's some really nice stuff. Apple does do very shiny things very, very well, doesn't it? And did you love the maps you could do? Mm. You know the sort of Indiana Jones classic intercut scenes where the little red line follows the planes, it goes from Mongolia to China and stuff? You can do that now in iMovie, and they look really, really nice. They're really pretty.
They do have a way of presenting very beautifully, don't they? Well, you can tell us if you agree with all of these things or not by commenting on the Guardian's technology blog, or sending us a message. All the details on how to contact us are at guardian.co.uk/techweekly, where apparently you can also sign up to get our Twitter messages too. Okay, so we're about to jump on a plane down to Las Vegas tomorrow, where we're going to hear from Steve Ballmer, Robbie Bach of Microsoft, and quite a few other people too. So tune in tomorrow for the latest installment of your Tech Weekly Daily or something. And visit guardian.co.uk/technology for news, updates, videos, and a veritable feast of blogging. Until then, thanks to Chris Finn, Danny Bradbury, and our producer in London, Scott Corley. I'm Bobby Johnson, and thank you for listening.